So welcome back to the part two of our chat with Mark. So in the last episode, we explored his journey into guiding and what it's like to live and work in the wild. But today, we're shifting gears as we dive into his deep interest in elephant research and behavior, as well as his unique approach to wildlife photography. So from understanding how elephants communicate to creating striking black and white fine art images, Mark has some incredible insights to share. So let's jump straight back in. Now, Mark, I happen to know that you have a crazy love for elephants, and elephants are such complex, intelligent animals, but you've developed a real interest in their communication and behavior. So what was it that first drew you to studying them more closely? Was there a particular moment or experience that sparked this fascination?
I don't know if there's a particular moment. It's just where I kind of sparked it is, I just kept, when you're sitting with an elephant herd or even bulls, and you just kind of watch how they are so tactile towards each other and their vocal communications, and you kind of sit there wondering, like, what does that mean? What is he saying? What is that meant to be saying? What is that indicating to the other elephant? So it's like something like, it's almost like, I want to get in on the gossip. I want to know what's going on.
That's awesome.
That's something sparked me. And then I started getting deeper into it, reading different studies, different papers, doing different courses, kind of reading up on different types of knowledges about it and trying to figure out as much as I possibly can. And it's just been a rabbit hole. It's so deep and it's just never ending.
That's awesome. Oh, awesome. Okay. So elephant communication is incredibly intricate, like rumbles, infrared sound, body language. What's one of the most interesting things you've learned about how they communicate? And have you like ever witnessed something in the wild that really made you stop and think, wow, these animals are really on another level?
Yeah, so in terms of their communication, it's definitely one of my favorite things about them is their rumbles. So there was a study done that showed that elephants have unique names, I guess you could say, for each individual.
Oh, wow.
So they did a study where they recorded a call between an elephant and another individual, and they replayed it back when that same individual was around, and only that individual from that herd responded to that rumble or vocalization, indicating that it was directed to that single individual and not just a general herd call.
Wow, that is
so
awesome.
They have a lot of unique ways to talk to each other separately, and it's when you kind of figure out that there's a research done, I'll have to find the paper, it's so long ago, but there was a research done that the mothers, female elephants, actually have maternal calls for their calves, and it will be either low pitch rumble, and none of the other herd members will respond, and it will either be a call to come suckle or a call that the calf is too far away and needs to come back to mom.
That is amazing. You know, I always sit and wonder, you know, like, we've got ChatGPT, AI, all of these like new things that are coming into play. Like, can't ChatGPT learn how to like dissect elephant rumbles so we can know what they're saying?
It would be very
nosy. We want to know the gossip.
Exactly. There we go. It would be very cool. I mean, they haven't even finished kind of studying elephant communication. It's so advanced that they've barely scratched the surface on it. They've just touched up on what they think they know. We know so little about what actually goes on with elephants, so much so that when elephants produce that low rumble, it's been believed and studied to show that that rumble that we can actually hear is supposedly the end of the conversation between the individuals, because it starts off at such a low frequency that we cannot hear it. It's just below our decibel range. And then towards the end of the conversation, it gets to the range where we can hear it. So we're only hearing a segment of that call from that individual out of that entire rumble process that originally started with them. We're missing a lot.
Wow. Okay. I know us humans can hear 20 hertz, right? What do elephants communicate with?
I haven't actually got that deep into it. I'm not sure. I know it's below that. I think it's somewhere at like 10 to 15.
Okay. Wow.
And they can go quite far. Also, they can communicate via the vibrations in the ground. So if there is a bull or a herd in the distance and someone lets out a rumble, that herd in the distance will pick up on that communication and kind of discuss if they need to either, if they're safe to approach that herd or they should go around. So it's at a decibel range that I'm not sure of the exact number. I'll get back to you on that one.
Oh,
but
I look forward to it.
No, it is. It's definitely something that's, it's something that needs to be studied further. And I'm definitely going to be looking into it further. I wish ChatGPT could get on top of it. It should be very cool to interpret elephant rumbles. I'm sure it can't be that hard to kind of record, process, and turn that audio processing into some sort of an emotional measurement or some sort of measurement regarding emotional intelligence or something like that.
Yeah, awesome. So that kind of brings me into my next question. If you had the opportunity to dive deeper into elephant research, is there any specific aspect you'd want to study further? Like, would it be more on the behavioral side, conservation challenges, or something else entirely?
If I had to dive into it, it'd probably be big tusker conservation in northern Kenya.
Oh, okay.
Those big tuskers there fascinate me beyond, and just their sheer power and size and just their overall beauty of them just fascinates me. And they are at such a risk of extinction with poaching and ivory trade that if I had to go anywhere, it would probably be into that research on how to defend them further and how to keep that genetic gene pool alive.
Yes, and I think we've kind of picked up on this on YWP. I kind of know that you're interested in that already.
Every now and then someone will post a picture of a tusker and I'm like, ooh, who's that?
Yes, 100%. Now, I want to delve into a bit of a topic here. I want to ask your opinion, just your personal opinion, on the elephant population. Now, you are someone who has got a great love for elephants, but what about the conservation challenges and the habitats and stuff? I want to hear your opinion on that.
That is a hot topic. It can land you in such hot waters. So it depends where you are in the world and in Africa. Your Kruger National Park, they are struggling with elephant numbers. The elephant numbers are becoming overwhelming and they are destroying habitats.
Yeah.
Also, the genetic gene pool of a lot of the herds isn't strong as to what it used to be. I mean, now they currently are. There's a lot of good, healthy elephants, a lot of tuskers coming out of Kruger. So you kind of have to be careful, because I know they want to do contraception, but you can only do contraception with so many individuals.
Yes.
There are in Kruger Park sitting on something like 40,000 elephants, if I'm not wrong. I don't know, I've heard a lot of people bring up the word culling and culling and cropping the population. Myself, I don't necessarily believe in actually cropping or culling. I just think it's unnecessary. It also creates a lot of waste. Like, what are you going to do with all of those carcasses? Like, you can say you're going to feed it to the local community. How much elephant are they going to accept? Because what, that's one female elephant is already 4 to 5 tons. How many carcasses are you going to give them, which is going to be to the point where it's too much?
Yeah.
I'm more in favor of your contraception.
Yes.
I think your contraception could work quite well. Yeah, you may not be able to administer it to every female on the reserve in terms of Kruger, but you can do a good amount where you can control the numbers. I mean, it's been like the reserve I'm at currently, our female elephants are on contraception and we're controlling the numbers quite well.
That is amazing.
And we haven't had damage. We haven't had to cull any elephants. We haven't had to move any elephants out. It's all just kind of been natural selection from nature itself. And we've just intervened via contraception. So it's a very hot water topic.
Yes.
You have to be careful with what you say, where you tread.
Yes, you do.
So Kruger definitely needs some sort of control. They are getting overwhelmed and elephants are going to start damaging the ecosystems. And eventually, even Kruger Park being 2 million hectares, for 40,000 elephants, that can become diminished pretty quickly.
No, 100%.
Elephants do a lot of damage. So, and then the next thing you got to deal with, if they start moving towards more the fence lines and dealing with the surrounding communities, because then not only are you not dealing with elephant population, you're not dealing with elephant human conflict, which is a whole other problem.
Yes.
That can lead to controlling the population in general.
Okay, awesome. I think we're going to leave it there because it is quite a hot topic.
And I'm not trying to land in any hot waters here.
I know. I just wanted to hear your personal opinion on it. Everyone has different opinions. I mean, we had with Junior Honorary Rangers, we had an elephant debate on the whole conservation topic. And things did get things did get pretty heated. Luca was sweating. I've never seen him sweat so much before. Not even a jump.
Luca's a calm individual as well. I know Luca's just a calm guy. I've never really seen him get frustrated or angry, so I can imagine.
Uh-huh. So yeah, I love hearing people's different opinions on it. So awesome. Thank you for that. But now I want to delve into the photography side of it. So along with being a guide, you're also a photographer with a really unique editing style. In fact, I know through YWP that you've been into wildlife photography for some time, actually. But when did your passion for photography start?
So I picked up my first camera in about grade 6.
Okay.
And it's just a little Canon point and shoot.
Awesome.
And then it got going from there. I started watching YouTube videos. I started watching guys like Peter McKinnon, and just your general photographers. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I discovered further into wildlife, and I started looking more into wildlife photographers like Marlon Dutoit, David Yarrow, Will Fortescue, all of those guys. And then I picked up my first DSLR in about grade 8 went for that, rented a few lenses over years. And then from then it just sparked. As soon as I saw the images I could create, then it just spread like wildfire.
Okay.
And it just didn't stop.
Awesome. Now, what's your current equipment?
Currently, I'm running a Canon R7 with the Sigma 150-600 Contemporary.
Ooh.
And then my main lens is a 24-105, Canon 24-105 L series. I love getting those wide angle shots. I think they're so powerful.
Especially with elephants.
Mm-hmm. Elephants, you can't have a, you can't really, you can use the zoom, but it's not going to show you the full elephant.
Yeah.
And that's what you're missing out on.
Awesome. Okay. Love that. Mm. I love the equipment as well. The R7 is a very powerful camera.
It's a powerhouse.
Awesome. Okay. But now balancing guiding and photography must be tricky. You're often focused on giving guests the best experience, but you also want to capture those moments for yourself. So how do you balance that in the field?
So weirdly enough, for me, that's something I've recently discovered. So you get to a point as a guide, when you a guide with a camera, that you've taken so many images that you kind of give you, kind of allow yourself a break to focus on the guests, because you can only take so many pictures of that same male lion you see on that reserve, or you can only take so many pictures that you're happy of that elephant when you're with guests, of course. So being with guests, there are restrictions in terms of your photography. It's a great space to grow your photography. But after you've taken, I mean, with my style of photography, I'll probably take about 4 or 5 photos during a drive, and I'll maybe pull 1 or 2 out that I'm happy with, if that. So I've actually been lucky, and I've managed to balance myself more with the guest side than photography side, because it's very seldom that I actually get a moment on drive where I get a picture of an animal that I can actually say, you know what, that will work in black and white, and then I can actually take a photo. So I mean, I'm pretty lucky with that. I know some guides struggle with it. They will kind of hold that camera glued to their face and they won't say a word to the guests. So you got to be careful with that. It can damage your guest experience, and they will report you for it. So you just got to be careful and find your balance between. I mean, even if your guest has a camera, bring that into it, and you can then work on photographic guiding with your guests. And if they're taking a photo, being like, listen, my settings are on so and so, maybe try this. And then you can then now, well done, you've incorporated guiding with your photography.
Awesome.
So now you're both taking pictures and both enjoying the experience.
Win-win. Everyone wins.
There we go. Win-win.
But I love how you kind of mentioned a bit of your black and white there. So your photography style leans very much towards black and white fine art, which really highlights the texture, the contrast, as well as the mood. So what is it about black and white photography that speaks to you more than color? I've always wanted to ask this question.
So I've always said the heated topic of that other guy or that other person may have a solid picture of a leopard or a lion in black and white, but they don't have that sharp image of an elephant in black and white. They don't have that sharp image of a lion's tongue in black and white. They don't have, so it's creating those unique pieces that not everyone else has, because everyone has that picture of a hippo yawning. Everyone has that picture of a lion yawning or doing the Fleming grimace response, but not everyone has that picture in a black and white that is pin sharp, that brings out that contrast, that brings out that texture.
Okay.
So it's definitely a thing. And it's also in terms of the fine art side, it's a lot easier to sell those pictures in turn into and put it into frames and houses than it is for color, which is unfortunate because color, there are some powerful color pictures out there. But a lot of these days, monochrome photographic has taken the world by storm. And that's what's being put up in galleries and houses and all of that type of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can tell you, I have a black and white of a lion's like side profile eye. It might not be a lion's tongue, but I've got that. And it's a sharp black and white. So there we go.
Yeah, there you go. See, and not everyone has that sharp black and white picture of that lion's eye.
Exactly.
So there's your draw factor for it. There's your, that's your pull. So if someone wants that photo and someone else shows them a color photo, you can show them the black and white and like, oh, have a look at this instead and look at the contrast, look at the moodiness of the picture. And that's what really draws people.
I love that. Awesome. Okay. So you're very much into the artistic side of photography, which I love because, you know, I think many people like to follow trends because, I mean, I hate to say it, but Instagram has gone.
Don't get me started.
Yes, I know. We're talking about sensitive topics today, but Instagram has changed so much since when I got my like first account, which was in 2021, I think, when I started my
account.
Things have changed so much. So I understand why people like to follow trends because they can see, oh, this does well. I can get followers with this. I can get likes with this. But then you're taking away from the unique kind of, this is my kind of style. And I found that I was actually like guilty of that. Luca is very much a habitat kind of landscape photography. He loves to get habitat. Where myself, on the other hand, I am a like fan of portraits, but I felt that through that kind of Instagram doing its funny business, now it always does its funny business, but during that kind of shift, you were always trying to see what can I do to like get the next viral like post and something. So you're trying all of these different things, but you then take away from what is uniquely yours and your unique style that you like. So now I don't care what anyone else thinks, really. Like, it's my photo. Yeah. I like it. I'm going to post it. But then you've got those.
There you go. Exactly. You don't need. As nice as it is to see the 1,000 likes racking up and those verified accounts from Canon or Sony start following your profile. Following your own passion and your own style will bring more satisfaction because you're like, oh, you know what? I really like this picture, so I'm going to share
it. Exactly. But I also understand where you have these photographers that come in with, and they're still under like 100 followers and they're like, how can I not, like, how can I be like them? You know, how can I be those people that have got tens of thousands of followers? How can I be like them? And that's when I was actually speaking to a psychiatrist the other day and we kind of touched, and not for my mental health, I have to put that out there. He was on the podcast, okay? Not for me.
Breaking news, everyone. Breaking news.
He was actually in my last podcast. He was a lovely guy. His name's Michael and he just reached 900 bird species.
See, that's impressive. See, that's cool about birds. That's impressive. Yes.
Anyway, so he's a psychiatrist and I was talking to him. And we kind of touched on a bit on social media and how, you know, followers, likes, how we've put a value on everything and how people like love to compare themselves now. And then that brings them down in their photography. And I think it's kind of been brought down. Like, I mean, we can get into body shaming and stuff, but we're not going to talk about that on here. But it comes into everything. It's all different aspects of social media, but it also comes into photography. So basically what I am trying to say, because I'm going a long way around me saying this, but what I'm trying to say is I find it amazing how you have stuck to what you are passionate about. You have stuck to your style, your black and whites, and people know you as the black and white photographer guy. What can I say?
There you go. Yeah.
You've got your style and that's great. But anyway, enough about that. Not every image works in black and white. Some photos lose impact without color, while others become even more powerful, like elephants. So how do you decide when an image is meant to be black and white?
So I kind of just shoot when I take a photo, and then I'll post drive, look on the back of my camera, and this is before I even put it onto my laptop, and I go, okay. And then I'll put it onto my laptop, and then I'll probably pull, let's say on a day I take, because the Canon R7, it just takes photos. There's no stopping it. So I'll probably pull 20 photos off my camera onto my laptop, and then I'll work through them, and then I'll start putting them all into monochrome, and then I'll look at the blacks and I'll look at the whites. I don't like using 50 shades of gray. I like using blacks and whites. And I'll look at it, and then I'll be like, okay, this is going to work. Can I do a high key with this, or should I just keep it dark and moody? And you'll see a lot of my style is dark and moody, because I think it brings out that type of that animal that it is, that raw, wild effect. But then if you look in my two recent posts, it's two powerful color photos of lions, and it just brings out that golden glow of that lion fur, and it just works.
Yeah.
So when it comes to your black and white, you have to be so careful, because certain photos you will just kill with black and whites. You just cannot put it in black and whites. Like leopards, I've got maybe 2-3 pictures of leopards in black and white, and I've got them on my Instagram, and I'm still not happy with them.
I get
it. So that's one thing. You cannot put a leopard in black and white. You can try, but it's just not going to work.
Okay.
You need to see that color. You need to see those eyes. But when it comes to like your elephants or your buffalo or your hippo, even your lion, your big lions, those are your subjects for black and white. Those you pump your texture and your color, and or not your color, sorry, your contrast up. And then you'll really see that image pop. So if I'm looking at, say, I don't know, a big male lion, he's staring me straight on, I can immediately tell, I can use that as a nice, dark, moody image, and I'll put that into black and white, and I will make sure I'll lift up the shadows, and I'll make sure his mane pops, and I'll bring out his eyes a little bit, and so you just get that dark effect, because male lions are meant to be these intimidating, scary individuals, and that black and white helps that bring out that dark moodiness, and kind of, if you would say, evil behind a male lion.
No, exactly. Yeah, it really does bring that out, which is amazing. So, I love how I love the fine art, like, aspect of it, because it really is bringing, because you get the people that take photos just for the fun of it, because, you know, I'm on holiday, let's just take photos. But you really, I don't know, are you an artist, like drawing, paints, I don't know?
No, you won't catch me doing
it. Okay, I just had to ask. But yeah, it's amazing how there's so many different aspects of art, and it's great that you'll never catch me drawing, but I can take pretty good black and white photos, which is a form of art.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely something that it's been a challenge. A lot of people have asked me, like, I've got a lot of family members that have asked me for prints in color, and I'm saying, I'm sorry, I just
can't
don't
do it.
Color.
Sorry.
I cannot. I've got maybe 2 or 3 images in color, and I just cannot do it. The black and white's where I'm happy. It's where I feel comfortable editing. And they're like, can you not just give me a line picture in color? I literally say, I'm sorry. If I look on my laptop, I don't have a picture of a lion in color.
Wow. Okay.
I think on my Lightroom backups, I've got saved. I've got high key, low key, dark, moody. And then I think I've got a color section where there's about 5 images of color.
Wow. Okay. But also, like, I think I 100% agree with you when you talk about some, like, images have to be color. Like, imagine you get an amazing lion at golden hour. Now, yes, lions, big male lions are scary, intimidating, like you were just saying. But then you get rid of golden hour. And golden hour is
exactly.
Like, I don't know how to explain it. It's the best.
It's hard to get rid of. Yes. If you've got a lion perfectly backlit by that sun at golden hour, and you've just got it pin sharp, you cannot get rid of that color. It just pops, it works. Yeah. And if you put that into black and white, I will personally hunt you down myself and turn that back into color. Even myself, I will come put that back into color.
Awesome. Okay, but now continuing with fine art again. Fine art wildlife photography is more about than just capturing the animal. It's about storytelling, emotion, and 100%. Artistic expression. Whether you like to say you're an artist or not, I think you are, and it has so much artistic expression. But what's the feeling or message that you try to convey through your black and white work?
That's an intense question. No, in terms of the message I'm trying to convey is that nature's raw. It's not beauty. It's not as beautiful as nature can be. It's not beautiful, if you get what I'm trying to say. It's rough, it's raw. And those black and white images, even of those black and white landscapes, or if you've got a nice close-up of a lion and you can see his teeth, it just kind of brings out saying that this is what nature is. This is the, literally, it's black and white. It's simple. This is what nature is. There's no hidden story behind it. And black and white allows you to create that effect that if someone's got a picture of a shark in their office, or they've got a picture of a lion or whatever, and it's intimidating. If you walk into an office where for an interview and someone's got a nice massive picture of a lion or an elephant sitting behind them, it can be intimidating. And it's to create those dramatic moments in life where you look at that photo and you're like, wow, that's intimidating. Mm. And it's true, because that's what it does to you. That's what nature does. It brings out that raw emotion in you. And that's what I'm trying to do with my photos.
Awesome. Yeah, I wouldn't really like to go in for a job interview and there to be one big scary lion in the back.
Yeah, exactly. Like lion roaring in massive black and white behind the boss. And you're like, okay, what is this guy trying to tell me?
Awesome. Okay. But now, I mean, there are quite a lot of young photographers that, you know, are still trying to like find their feet. They want to find what feels right to them, and they want to experiment with fine art photography, but aren't sure where to start. So what advice would you give to someone looking to explore black and white wildlife photography? Like any tips on shooting or editing for maximum impact?
If you're trying to get into black and white, your best times of day are not morning. It's not golden hour. It's not during peak summer day. You want those dark, moody days. You want those dark clouds. You don't want blue skies and nice, colorful scenes. You want moody. You want sad. Not sad, but you want kind of that moody setting. And when it comes to editing, you want to kind of forget that there's color in that photo. You want to work with more of the shades rather than color. You want to work with the shadows. So if you're editing a picture of an elephant, try bring out that color and that. What I keep saying color, I'm not the person to talk about color. You want to bring out that contrast. You want to bring out that texture and that clarity in that skin, because an elephant's skin is just, I mean, you posted a picture on your story the other day that was in black and white of an elephant skin.
Oh, thank you. And that, I'm glad you noticed.
Yeah. I make sure I take note of everyone's black and white images. I keep notes. No, but that bringing out that roughness and that detail in elephant skin in black and white really just pops, and it doesn't have the same effect in color. So really work with the shadows, work with the shades, work with everything, the clarity, the contrast.
Yeah.
Don't try. I wouldn't say out the gate. I wouldn't say try create as dramatic shots as I would like now. I mean, the way I'm doing it now has taken me years to do, and I'm still trying to find my kind of style.
Exactly.
And it's slowly moving more towards the heavily dramatic, heavily edited side. It's not natural. Mm. It's, as you were saying, it's more artistic pieces. Yes. It's not meant to be a natural line picture. So if you are trying to get into that, go slow, don't rush yourself, and just shoot with what you think you're going to work with. Look back at your laptop. And if you aren't happy with the final edit, that's fine. You're not going to be happy a lot of the time. You're going to look at this photo being like, oh, it's not great. It's going to happen, but just keep pushing. Black and white's a very challenging type of photography to do. And eventually you will get the hang of it, as long as you just keep pushing and you learn your editing styles. And as I can say, everyone knows YouTube is your best friend these days.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands of tutorials on editing in black and white. There's so many interviews. I mean, I think I've watched this one interview by David Yarrow at least 10 times every time I was stuck with an edit, and it's just helped me. So YouTube is your best friend. Don't be afraid to use YouTube.
Yeah.
And even for the first few photos or while that you do it, mimic other people's styles. That's what I did when I was starting. And then eventually you'll start moving away from that style that you are mimicking, and you'll start developing your own style, being like, oh, I've put this touch on the photo that's maybe changed it to the way I like it. And again, this goes back to the way that if you like the photo, then that's all you need. You don't need to worry about getting the 4,000 likes straight off the bat.
Exactly.
That will come later in life. Rather focus on getting a black and white photo that you're happy with, and that you can think of having a picture on your wall at your home, and then you'll go from there.
Exactly. Yeah. I like to ask myself that question. Gabby, would you have this as a huge print in your room? And then if I say yes, then I'll post it. If no, then I'm like, okay, why am I going to post this? Why am I trying to validate this? Like, who am I going to try and impress other than myself? But you're actually talking about that, the texture and the elephant skin that I posted. Did you see the elephant tail? Did you see that one?
I did see that one, which is a very sharp image.
Thank you. It was taken. I was actually on foot, but anyway, it was at, yeah, it was at Pietersburg Center. Have you ever been to Pietersburg? Nice.
Once when I was like 8.
Okay, so it was at Pietersburg Center, and they had this lovely herd of elephants come down, and I was lying on the ground, as a true photographer should when you're trying to get low angles.
Yep.
And literally right through the little like railing kind of stick thing, I had the like little like there's little gaps between there, and I had my camera out.
Yeah.
And I managed to get that photo, and I found it so unique because, yes, everyone has to have a photo of an elephant's tusk. Like, that's common. Like, people have got that,
yeah.
Okay? But who's got a photo of a low-angle elephant's tail?
I can tell you, no, I don't.
Exactly.
I don't have that photo.
Exactly. So that's why you have to have your unique style, and that's why you...
Exactly.
I can talk about this for days, about being unique and having your own scent.
I mean, I've got all day. You might not, but I've got all day.
Exactly. You've got all day. awesome. But, yeah, like, I'm such a firm believer of being unique and having your own things. I mean, I spoke to Carolina Nori. I'm sure you know her. She's huge on Instagram.
I do know her, yes.
And we were on an Instagram live, and we were talking about the whole phase and the kind of cycle that beginner photographers go through to get to where they are today. Mm-hmm. And it's the heavily, like, we're talking in color now, okay? I know you might not like it, but we're talking in color.
No, it's fine. I'll allow it. It's all right.
And we're talking about the high contrast, the vibrance, the exposure. You can kind of imagine those greens that are like shocking, like illuminating green. You can kind of see where I'm getting here with the editing. And it's the exact same. Now, you wouldn't know because you're not a girl, but it's the exact same as a girl going through makeup to kind of like... It takes a while to get through it, to kind of see what's your own unique style and what it looks awful on you and what doesn't. It's the same with photography, where you have to kind of find your feet. And, you know, what would the world be like if everyone was the same? What would it be like if we were all good at everything and we didn't have to learn? Like, we didn't... Yeah. You kind of get what I'm saying.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah, it's... Wildlife photography would be boring if everyone took color photos of lions and leopards. You need a bit of differentiation. Like, I know Carolina, she does a lot of very, very colorful images, but she's done a lot of dark, moody images, also in color and black and white, which have done really well.
Exactly. So,
and it just shows you that even maybe sometimes stepping off of your path of what you normally do helps.
Mm. And then also lets you get other aspects of like, oh, this is nice, this could work for me. I mean, I have this one photo of a black mamba in this tree. And because it's a black mamba, you want it to be moody. You want it to be dark because, you know, that's what feels like fits. Fits the image best. But then I've got some of the most airy fairy kind of lovely light sage green photos that look like you're in heaven. And it's so funny to see how everything can range depending on what fits the photo. So I think that's what it comes down to, the artistic approach.
Yeah, it's everyone's different. Everyone's got a different angle with photography. Like, when I finished up with those two lion photos that I did in color, just those dark moody ones, but it was in color, I was like, there was a part of me that, I'll be honest, was genuinely uncomfortable, that I was somewhat stepping away from black and white, kind of stepping outside my comfort zone, if you will. And I was like, but back in the back of my head, I was like, okay, these images really pop. They work well.
Exactly.
So sometimes it's, if the artistic approach fits it in, it's not black and white, I'll use it. But yeah, you'll never see me working with lime greens and heavenly fairy-like photos. it's one of those things. You'll always see me stick to the darker, moody side of photos.
Okay. It's so great that everyone has a different approach. I mean, I have over the years found that I love the kind of very natural, minimal editing, where you are on the completely other end of the scale. So what would the world be like if everyone was the same? But now, moving on, because we've been on this topic for a while now. So you're still you're still early in your career, but looking ahead, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years? Do you want to stay in guiding, or do you see yourself moving into another side of conservation, photography, or even lodge management?
I think I'm one of the few people that actually know where I want to go in 5 to 10 years. I think it's a very difficult subject. I mean, not subject, question for people to answer. Because yes. It's like, why do I need to know what's happening in 5 to 10 years time? Yeah. But I see myself moving away, not completely away from guiding, maybe more into photographic guiding.
Okay.
But more kind of running my own expeditions on my own as a photographer, gaining those unique one piece, one item only images that are going to sell and do well. That's what I'm trying to actually move more towards, is eventually photographic guiding, move away from photographic guiding, and then just focus more on creating these limited edition fine art prints. Awesome. That will hopefully one day be displayed in galleries.
Okay. Well, when that day comes, because I'm sure it will, we'll have you back on the podcast in 10 years time and we'll have to hear about your whole experience.
Cannot wait.
But that is awesome, because like you said, it's a scary question to some, because some people just really don't know. They'll be like, yeah, like you said, like with the attitude, why do I need to know? I'm taking it day by day, which is fine for some people, but it's also great when someone knows what they want to do. And I can tell you.
You can say you know what you want to do in 5 to 10 years, but that might change.
Exactly.
You never know what's going to happen in those 5 to 10 years, but as long as you've got that plan, you've got something to focus on, and you might as well start pushing towards
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You need goals. You need goals. But I can tell you, if everything goes to plan, because like you said, things can change, I can tell you in 5 years, I'm still going to be studying. So yay. Yay for Gabby.
What do you want to be studying? What is this? What is this idea?
Veterinary sciences. So it's a 7-year.
Oh, wow. Like, you really want to study.
Yeah, you're like on the complete other end. Don't want to study. Don't want to sit in class.
I want to avoid books. Like, ugh.
And yeah. I'm in for the long haul, but yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, enjoy those varsity lectures. Oh, I can think of nothing worse, but I'm sure you'll love it again, because it comes down to your interests. Exactly. So I can say I won't like it, but I'm sure it's going to be something that you're going to absolutely thrive in. And it's just different for everyone.
We hope so. Appreciate. We'll hope.
We hope so.
We really do hope so.
Way to be positive about your up and coming career. We hope so.
Awesome. Okay. Well, there are a lot of young people in the YWP community who are passionate about wildlife and photography, but don't know how to turn that passion into a career. So what's the one piece of advice you'd give them? I know this might be a difficult question. I like difficult questions.
Okay. No. That one piece of advice is the most, it's like the most commonly cliche thing anyone's ever said, is don't give up.
Okay.
Genuinely, like, as cliche and as commonly said as it is, just don't give up. Because if you do give up, you're going to regret it. Because you're going to look at what you could have had, and you're like, oh, I should have pushed and I should have just carried on. As hard as it may be now, if let's say you're trying to become that world-renowned photographer with hundreds of thousands, millions of followers, and you're sitting with your little Instagram account on 100, maybe 500 followers, and you're like, oh, this isn't going anywhere. Don't give up. Trust me, one day you're going to hit that one moment and you're going to do something right. And it's just going to take off from there. It's not going to, it may not be tomorrow. It may be in 4 to 5 years time, but it's going to come eventually. Also stick to your style. Jumping on the bandwagon every now and then is not bad, but find your style, stick to it, stay off of that path, kind of go onto the less walked path of photography. Don't really follow everyone else. Be that wild card, break away from everything, break away from the norms, and be different. There's no need to follow the same trend paths as much as it might work. Do your own thing, and you might get judged for it, but at the end it will pay off. And then as well, just let your camera be your best friend, and let your studies be your best friend. With whatever you want to do, make sure you have a passion for it, because if you have a passion for it, whether it's studying, whatever it may be, if you have a passion for it, you're going to succeed, and you're going to push far, and you're going to go far in the world that you want to go into.
Exactly. I love that. I saw a quote, I think a few days ago, and it went along the lines of, you just need, I think 18 minutes a day is enough to like, I took it into how many hours it is a year, and that is enough to like solidly concrete a passion and something that you really want to work hard on into your head, and like, so it becomes routine. Okay. 18 minutes a day, 18 minutes a day on your Instagram, editing photos, engaging with other photographers, doing research, doing whatever. And that, it's like you said, don't give up. 18 minutes a day, and you can you know, create a habit of it and then become like literally addicted to it and you just stick by it.
Yeah. I mean, that 18 minutes a day could be used networking with, as you said, with other photographers. Exactly. It could be editing. It could be researching different types of photography, mm-hmm. different gear that you might want in the future. But that 18 minutes a day, even 15 minutes a day, that 15 minutes is valuable.
Exactly.
It is something that you're not going to get back. And if you use that 15 to 18 minutes wisely, it's going to take you far.
Exactly. And it's if you think about it, what is 15 minutes a day?
Exactly. It's between when you're having breakfast and you could be sitting having your bowl of cereal, scrolling through Instagram, messaging people, DMing people, making connections. And that's what? That's 15 minutes. You've just had breakfast and done some sort of social media work to try push your presence online.
Exactly.
That's your 15 minutes done. You can go do the rest of your day now.
I love that. Okay. Well, guys, I hope this inspires you to carry on. Don't give up.
Inspirational words of Mark, ladies and gentlemen.
Inspirational words of Mark. But that brings us to the end of this podcast. Mark, it's been incredible hearing about your journey.
Thank you.
From deciding to become a field guide to your passion for elephants and, of course, your stunning black and white wildlife photography. Your insights and experiences have been truly inspiring, and I know our listeners will take a lot away from this conversation. So a huge thank you for joining us and sharing your story.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
I'm really glad you enjoyed it. So to our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this deep dive into life in the bush and behind the lens. If you did, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for our next episode, where we'll be chatting with another fascinating guest from the world of wildlife, photography, and conservation. But until then, keep exploring, keep capturing, and keep sharing your passion for the wild. This is Gabby Sikora for the YWP Podcast, signing out.